I'm Kurt Benkert, and this is Pocket Presence, powered by Sleeper. Here we go. Welcome back to another episode of Pocket Presence. And look, we're in the dead time of the NFL. Pro days are going on. Combine just passed. And so we decided that it's time to go and look at one of my former teams that's had a lot of shakeup, the Atlanta Falcons. And I think even if you're not a Falcons fan, this episode can be really good for you to listen to. I think you'll learn about some of the process of how we look at things, how we look at teams, how we break it down and see players' value. There's going to be fantasy implications of this, and we're going to go and do a few more teams in the same style. So bear with us. I think it's going to be a fun episode. But Tyler, we're back. We're back with another one. I just got back from Hawaii. Long flight. And what have you been up to?
Man, I'm fighting a bit of a cold right now, but what better medicine than talking through some Atlanta Falcons football? You mentioned it. I think the fantasy implications of this team are more than any other team I can really think in the NFC. Yeah. And the frustrations that fantasy managers have probably felt with some of these offensive skill position players, I hope will be remedied at the end of this episode.
I will say this right now. I'm making a bold claim today. Today is March 28th. The Atlanta Falcons will have players on their team this year that will be the reason why fantasy GMs win their championship. You heard it here first. And we're going to dive in because this, I think the Atlanta Falcons have the biggest swing potential from last year to this year to change dynasty leagues for GMs out there. And we're gonna just get this started. So let's talk about it. Last year, Arthur Smith, Terry Fontenot. I've been kind of saying it all along. Like, Terry Fontenot did a really good job of navigating, building this roster, making sure they had the pieces on offense. Their defense was pretty solid this year. But all in all, I felt like they had a good team. They just didn't find a way to put it together. What was the biggest missing point? I would say a competent head coach / OC navigation with what it took to win games with their current roster, and then also a quarterback. And what did they go and do? They went and they replaced their head coach with a guy that has just recently won a Super Bowl as a defensive coordinator with the LA Rams, leading Aaron Donald. No coincidence that Raheem Morris leaves and Aaron Donald retires, by the way. I'm just going to say it. Then they went and grabbed Kirk Cousins. Coming off of an Achilles, Kirk Cousins at his age, he's still got a lot of juice left in the tank. And for the style of player that he is, he does not need his Achilles to be 20 years, 25, 30 years old to play his style of football. He doesn't move around a whole lot. He's decisive. He's accurate. He lets it rip. He can throw it downfield. He moves just enough. And I think he's very similar in that Aaron Rodgers blend where, like, they don't need the extreme mobility. So I don't think they're going to be affected heavily by their Achilles. So you look at them, they have a ton of weapons. They've drafted a first round offensive weapon for the last 3 years in a row. They have Kyle Pitts, Drake London, Bijan Robinson. They did not have time to grab a young quarterback and let him figure it out while all these studs are on their rookie contracts. So they went and they grabbed Kirk Cousins at a discounted value because he was coming off an injury and he's older. And you have a young team ready to fight for it. You have a great O-line. You got guys like Chris Lindstrom, Jake Matthews, Gary's figuring it out. Like, you've got pieces up there. And then they went this offseason and they added some guys. Some guys, again, I think Terry Fontenot did a really good job of getting guys that have high ceilings at discounted values based on their circumstances or situations. You look at a guy like Darnell Mooney, was stuck in that abysmal Chicago offense. Didn't throw the ball a lot, but every time he touched the ball, he made plays. And you have a guy like Kirk Cousins who watched Darnell Mooney play twice a year against his team. Darnell Mooney was making plays whenever he got the ball in his hand. And I think everybody that watched any bit of film knew what the deal was. He just wasn't getting his targets. And now you flip to the other side. You go and get Rondale Moore for Desmond Ridder. Rondale Moore, same thing. Didn't get the most amount of targets. He was on a roster with Hollywood Brown. A guy like Greg Dortch started popping up. But Kyler tried to get the ball to him in big plays when he did. And every time Rondale Moore touched the ball, looked like something good was going to happen. So that's kind of what we're working with right now.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest unknowns here is still Raheem Morris. Not a guy that I think a lot of people know about. You do because you played for him when he was the interim in Atlanta before Arthur Smith got the job. What can you say about the kind of vibe shakeup that Raheem Morris is going to bring to this team?
So Raheem Morris, what I think he brings to the table. One, he was my coach in Atlanta for 3 years. He was, when I first got there, the receivers coach to Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu, and Calvin Ridley. Then we needed defensive coordinator help. Our defensive coordinator was fired. Raheem Morris's background actually was as a defensive coordinator. And he was a head coach like 10 years ago for the Bucs. Like, he was one of the youngest head coaches in the league at the time, maybe the youngest. So gets his experience, does everything, comes in, revamps the defense, and starts tightening things up. And again, we didn't have like the most star-studded defense, but they were attentive to detail. They made big plays. They created turnovers, and that's kind of like what his style has been. And I think what he brings back this time around is experience around another offensive scheme with McVay to see how he does it. Because that's the other thing about Raheem. He's one of the only coaches in the league that I know that could coach both sides of the ball with immense amount of detail, down to splits, foot placement, hand placement on blocking, hand placement when you're trying to rip like on a pass rush. Like, he knows all ball, all 22, he's your guy. And so I think as a guy like him, being able to have an oversee of an operation like that, I think he's the guy for the job, especially with what the Falcons are working with. They're working in a division that's weak. The Bucs, they made a little bit of a run, but it wasn't impressive. The Saints, I don't think they got better this offseason. And then you have the Panthers. The Panthers have no choice but to get better, but I don't think they're going to be that good. I think their defense is good, and we'll see what happens with their offense. They got a better offensive coordinator this time around in their new head coach. But I think this division, with the way that the team is set up, the things that the Falcons were missing, quarterback, coaching, Raheem Morris brings that, Kirk Cousins brings that, and they're an instant contender in my opinion. And I kind of look at them as like what I think people thought the Jacksonville Jaguars were going to be last year, and they ended up not being that. I think that they have the best team in the division. I think that they have a clear path to the playoffs if they can just handle business. And right now, I was hoping the whole time Raheem Morris was going to be the guy, and he is. And I'm really excited to see how it plays out.
So Raheem Morris also brings over Zach Robinson, who was the as the OC, he was the Rams offensive assistant, brings over Jimmy Lake as his DC, was the associate head coach for the Rams, and also Washington's head coach from 21 to 22. You get this McVay style of football now in Atlanta. How do you think that benefits a guy like Kirk Cousins and all of these offensive skill position players?
Yeah, so the cool thing about Kirk Cousins is he actually was thriving in the Kevin O'Connell system, and Kevin O'Connell came straight from LA and under McVay. So like the tree, there's a reason why they went and got Kirk Cousins. Like, the attachments, the lines, the FBI board, like it was all, if you look back now, hindsight, like it was Kirk Cousins, the people that he hired, the people that are there, the terminology, like, and when you get a guy like that into a system he's familiar with, it allows him to take lead with players quicker because he's not learning as much as the other guys. And he can start bringing those receivers along quicker. And I don't know, man, I'm super excited. Like every single piece that was a part of this puzzle was for a purpose and with a reason. And they got the guys that they did like very specifically. And I think as far as fantasy value goes for these guys, I'm looking at a guy like Kyle Pitts, dude. Kyle Pitts was getting less targets than Jonnu Smith last year. Like, in what world? In what world? And now you bring in Kirk Cousins, who loves feeding his tight ends. His tight ends eat. Hockenson, since Kirk Cousins has been there, has been eating. Right? Like they traded for Hockenson, what, last year? It was midway through 2 years ago, maybe? I think it was the trade. It was either last year or the year before. I think it was 2 years ago. But Hockenson started taking off, right? Like they have gotten every single piece in the right part of the puzzle for this team. And I would be really shocked if they do not have a really good year.
So the knock against Kirk Cousins has been he's great on paper last year, having a great year, but has not been able to make the jump yet to winning a lot of playoff games and inevitably winning a Super Bowl. What makes you think that this is his time now to make that leap into that next tier of quarterbacks that can win in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think, look, you went to probably the weakest, if not the second weakest division in football. And let's be honest, it's hard to play in the NFC North. You played against Aaron Rodgers for years, right? You played against Matt Stafford for a good chunk of those years. And I just think like, and now like the Lions, right? So the Lions are good. The Packers are good. The Bears, even though they're bad most of the time, like they're still not a gimme game. Like it's not been the easiest path. And even the year that they had their best year, they had like so many lucky things happen with the Vikings for them to get to where they got. Like that type of things falling into place has never been seen before in the NFL. Like their point differential and their record and stuff, like they had to overcome a lot. And now I think that this is just a full reset, right? You're getting to a division that, I mean, Baker Mayfield went to the division for the first time last year and just took it over essentially, right? This is kind of that Tom Brady type of move. It's getting really hard to win in the AFC East. Let's go to a weaker division and go dominate. And I think that's what Kirk Cousins is doing. And I think he's going to do that, assuming he can stay healthy. And look, the types of receivers that they have, Kirk Cousins is very accurate. They have a crazy run game with Bijan Robinson. They have big receivers. Drake London's a monster. Kyle Pitts is a monster, just like the style of play. And then you add in the short, fast guys like Darnell Mooney and Rondell Moore. Like they have the right pieces as long as everyone can stay healthy, or a majority of them can stay healthy, for this type of operation to hit the ground running in year one. So I think just in general, if Kirk Cousins is ever going to get over that hump, it's going to be in this division for this team.
Sure. Let's shift the attention to that three-headed monster you mentioned in Bijan, Pitts, and Drake London. Who do you think the biggest spotlight is on now that they have a competent quarterback? Like, who do you think falls under the most amount of pressure to perform this year?
It's Pitts, 100%. Like, Kyle Pitts has the most amount of pressure on him, but he has the most amount of help that he's ever gotten between play calling, quarterback play, how they're going to utilize the run game. Like, this, if there's one guy that I'd be willing to bet on one more time, take it to the well one more time, it's Kyle Pitts. And I just think, man, the way that they're going to find, the way that they're going to get the ball in their playmakers' hands, like, that's the one thing that I loved when I played with the Falcons. We had guys that you knew were going to get the ball every single game. You knew Julio was going to get his catches, Calvin was going to get his catches, and you just knew it. And it was like, okay, how are we going to get them their catches this week? It was very similar to what the Rams do. The Rams, you, no matter what, Puka is going to catch 8 to 10 balls a game. No matter what, Cooper Kupp's going to get his 6 to 8 balls a game. It just is what it is. There's no stopping that. And it does not matter. And I think right now, that's what you're going to see more out of this offense is like, look, we have some of the better players on the field. We're going to be creative in how we get them the ball. We're not going to say, oh, they're taking this away, we can't get our guy the ball. It's the NFL. Receivers are good. These guys are talented. Be creative as an offense coordinator, which they have now. Have a good quarterback who can deliver, and they're going to find ways to get their guys the ball in space. That's the name of the game right now. And the Rams figured it out. Their offense started clicking really late last year, even though they had a bunch of young guys. And now you have guys with the Falcons that are, one, in my opinion, more talented. They have a more talented running back. No offense to Kyron Williams. They have more juice at receiver. No offense to Cooper Kupp and Puka, but like, they have more, like, a higher ceiling as far as athletic goes. But again, not to take anything away from Puka, but Puka probably wouldn't be who he is if he didn't play in that system with Matt Stafford at quarterback. So like, we don't even know what other Pukas are out there right now because they don't have a guy delivering to him like that. So that's, again, nothing to take away from Puka, but we don't even know who's going to come out of this offense and be like, holy crap, they were a dog, because now they have a quarterback and an OC.
Excuse my metaphor here. Do you think there is an Achilles heel to this offense? I think there's a lot of optimism surrounding Kurt being plugged in with these really talented skill position guys. But if there were to be a flaw in this offense, where do you think that is?
I would say the flaw in this offense is going to be the other side of the ball. It's going to be the defense. It's going to be the Atlanta Falcons defense. I think that if this offense has to put up 30 points a game to win, that's not going to be a good recipe. But if this offense can be efficient and take what the defense gives them and have big plays that show up from time to time and not have to play hero ball, this offense can be elite. And you kind of look at it, like, look at the Chiefs from last year. The Chiefs offense, when they had to be elite, when they had to make all the plays, had to put up 30, 40 points, they actually started to play bad. But when their defense kept them in close games, they were able to operate and navigate situational football and play clean and not risk turnovers. And I think that is going to be what this offense needs more than anything, is what does the defensive side of the ball look like and how does it dictate the pace of the game? Because if the Falcons can play the pace of the game that they want to play and they can take care of the football and be clean and not have to be crazy risky, they have so many players that are just going to find their ways into making plays on 5-yard out routes, 10-yard out routes, crossing routes, checkdowns. Like, that can be a world that they live in and have a lot of success. If they got to go bombs over Baghdad and just air it out and like get into these shootouts every single week, that's not going to be the recipe that I think Kirk can thrive in. And that's something that he's had to deal with in his past, right? Like, he has these crazy games and that crucial turnover because he's thrown the ball 40 or 50 times. Like, he's still going to throw the ball a lot, but I think it's going to be a little more tame than it has been in years past.
Do you think there's a window to this team? Kurt is obviously 36, coming off a pretty serious injury. Is it like in the next 2 years, they have to win or else it's over? Do you think their window is a little bit longer than that? How do you feel about this team in the next 5 to 6 years?
Oh, man. I think the window to have immediate success has to be in the next 2 years. Like, they have to win a playoff game or two in year one. And I think in year two, they gotta do the same thing. They have to have 2 years where they at least get to the playoffs and win a game or two, I think, for that to be considered a success. And by the coaching staff, by the GM, by some of these players that are going to be up for contract renewals, giving them a reason to want to come back. Because at the end of the day, you have players that are going to get paid on their second contracts. They're talented guys. And other teams are going to be willing to pay them. So you have to basically be in a point where you're that close to winning a championship or something to get these guys to have enough incentive to come back and play for either a reduced pay slightly or give yourself a little hometown discount. Like, that's the kind of game that you're playing where, like, you'll have guys that'll go and leave to go play on a bad team for a max deal. Like, you've got to be in a position where, like, you're bringing people back for the right reasons and they're competing and they feel like they can win it next year if they come up close. So as long as Kirk Cousins is spinning it, I think they have a chance. As long as their young talent is producing, they have a chance. And I think, look, Atlanta is a place that under the right circumstances can be an ideal situation for free agents to come into. People like living in the city of Atlanta. Like, it's a good place to play football when they're winning games. It's fun. But as soon as they're not winning games, it sucks ass. So I think there's a fine line to be had, but I think their window is 2 years to start, and then it could be a longer thing.
How long does it take to flip that? Because less than 10 years ago, they were in a Super Bowl. They were about to win a Super Bowl. And now all of a sudden we talk about Atlanta like they're in the bottom tier of teams where you might not want to go play because of a bad culture. Does it flip on a dime? Like, can one good year make or break that kind of environment like you're describing, or will it take a couple good years stacked back to back?
I think 1 year can change it. Like, 1 year can change public perception and it can change players' perception for sure. And then having year two or three to kind of like repeat is where it's like, okay, we got something here. And I think that's like, you look at the Bengals were bad for so long and they had that 1 year where it was like, okay, like we're kind of here, but like, can we do it again? And then they did it. And then they had sustained success. And now people look at the Bengals like, okay, like they're a team that we can't just like dismiss. As long as they have Joe Burrow healthy and like a receiver or two, then they always have a chance, is kind of how I think most people look at them. And yeah, I mean, dude, they went to a Super Bowl a couple years ago. So it's like, we no longer look at the Bengals after 2 to 3 years of Joe Burrow like we did a long time ago. And I think the same thing with the Vikings. Like, we looked at the Vikings for a long time, like, again, not the same way that the Bengals did, but we looked at the Vikings like a pushover team before Kirk Cousins. Now Kirk Cousins went there and it's like, okay, like, they got an offense, like they can put up points. They're in that game. So, or they're going to be in game. So I look at it like it can flip pretty quick. It can be sustained after 2 to 3 years. And then I think, how do you draft that next crop of guys? Because once you've been somewhere 3 to 4 years, you're going to have turnover. So it's going to come down to the GM, scouting department, all those other moving pieces to see, how do we replace guys like a Bijan after 4 or 5 years, or do we keep him, or a Kyle Pitts? Like, there's no way that they're going to have Kyle Pitts, Bijan, and Drake London for the next 5 years. That doesn't happen typically. So what's the deal? What are they going to do?
Yeah, I like your analogy earlier, the Tom Brady to Tampa Bay analogy, both for what it means to Kirk Cousins personally. I agree he's going to a weaker division. But I think also when you talk about team building, you had those veteran guys, the Ndamukong Suhs, Rob Gronkowski's, that came down to Tampa to give it one last run. And it seemed like that veteran leadership helped propel them to the Super Bowl when they won it down in Tampa Bay. And maybe you get a similar sense with Atlanta, where instead of having a super young core, maybe you get some of these veteran guys who are on the back half of their career just looking to make a deep run one or two more times.
Totally. Dude, nobody that's like done a lot in their career and is playing no longer for the money, but for the Super Bowl. The money matters. Nobody wants to go to a team that doesn't have a quarterback. Like, that, you can't win a Super Bowl without a quarterback. So also, nobody wants to go to a team that has a young QB that's not proven himself yet. So you got guys like CJ Stroud. CJ Stroud's going to have that effect in Houston. Houston's going to get guys in free agency that they never would have had a chance to get. And I think that is the hidden value from a business perspective of getting a quarterback. Maybe, yeah, I don't know what Kirk Cousins is getting paid. Is it $40 million? A year, something like that?
I can look it up. I know it's $100 million over the next 4 years guaranteed, with incentives built in up to $150 million.
Yeah. So I think he's getting like $40 million-ish each year. Like, that $40 million investment you have to look at is also, yes, it's his play on the field. That's his impact on pricing or on ticket sales, because they're going to sell more tickets if they have a quarterback that's willing to sling it. That is going to increase the product on the field, which is then going to lead to other dollars and different partnerships, right? Then you have to look at, what does that do for free agents that you never would have had the opportunity to get, but now you do because you have a quarterback and people want to play in that style of offense. So guys like Darnell Mooney, like, I don't know what his market was around the rest of the league, but I'd imagine he had a few different options and he chose to go to Atlanta. You look at guys at the deadline that might want to get traded to your team. You look at guys in free agency next round, where this is the real thing. Once you get into year two of this Atlanta offense and this Atlanta team, after they've maybe made a little baby playoff run, what free agents are they able to get in 2025 that they would not have been able to get if it didn't look like they were a piece or two away from getting to the Super Bowl. And I know we're like way in the future here, but in the NFL, you have to play these business decisions in the future. That's what everything's about. It's a future of the team, future of the franchise. Like, these are billionaires at work, right? So I'm looking at already 2025 free agency, because this one's passed. Okay, maybe they win a playoff game or two and they feel like they're a piece away. And you have Bijan on the last year, or I guess he was a rookie last year. You have Bijan with a couple years left. You have Kyle Pitts with a couple years left. And then Drake London probably still has 1 or 2 years left. Like, what does that next free agency splash look like to elevate the team? Maybe it's the defensive side. Maybe they get a stud linebacker, a stud DB that is like the missing piece. So this is like how super teams with like out of nowhere get started. And I think they're well on their way, and they have the benefit of the doubt. They play in a weak division, and Atlanta is a desirable location. So I know we're like saying a lot of the same stuff, but it's how everything weaves together. Like, it's not just one thing happens and then bam, like, oh, they won a Super Bowl. Oh, they made a deep run. Like, it's a domino effect of this piece happened and then this happened and then this happened. And all of a sudden you got like two or three free agents that they never would have had that are now going to elevate them to being a contender.
When it comes to these young core guys that were holdovers from the last regime, do you think it puts more pressure on them or less pressure on them now that they have Kirk Cousins, now that they might start attracting top free agents? Because I think you can make the argument for both. And I'm curious at your input, having been in a locker room before, where now they have the expectations, but at the same time, they're not expected to be leaders because they have that veteran presence that now exists.
I think it takes pressure off, because I think at the end of the day, a lot of NFL guys play it so year to year, you're not as worried about what's going to happen 2 to 3 years from now. These guys just went through a lot with the coach that they had, the situation they were in, the offensive scheme that they were running. Like, nobody in the NFL runs that offense the way that they did. You have guys that are ballers, playmakers that like go, like the human aspect of this is, you look at a guy like Bijan, you look at a guy like Kyle Pitts, Drake London, they get into the NFL, their first round picks, you're like, damn, dude, I'm about to ball. Like, I'm about to sling it around. It's the NFL. And then you're stuck in this old ass offense, running the ball 20, 30 times a game, like, while they're seeing other receivers around the league, other running backs around the league being used in a creative sense. You look at Miami, you look at San Francisco, you look at all these other teams, Houston, that have like young studs that start popping off because they're getting schemed up in the right spots. People are wide open. Everybody around the league talks, everybody around the league watches film, and everybody knows what everybody else is doing. So if you're stuck in a place where, dude, why are we playing football this way, which is the general consensus of that locker room, they're nothing but excited to have a new fresh face at quarterback, a new fresh way of running the offense. You can't tell me that these guys have not seen the Rams offense and seen how Puka gets fed, how Higbee gets fed, how Kupp gets fed, how many yards Kyren Williams ran for last year. There's a lot of excitement being built around this team right now in Atlanta, just based off of like, what are other people doing around the league that we have not been? Wow. Okay. Fresh start. I get to start my real, what feels like NFL career now.
Yeah. Let's flip it to the other side of the ball. Whereas we can name dudes all day on the offensive side of the ball, defense, not so much. You mentioned that they've gone heavy in the early rounds on the offensive side. Mm-hmm. You think now bringing in a defensive head coach, maybe they'll start to allocate some draft capital there. What do you make of this Falcons defense coming into 2025?
Yeah, the Falcons defense needs help, right? Like, they have a few key pieces. They got guys like Jesse Bates, stud, AJ Terrell, stud. AJ Terrell, I'm not really sure what his, I think he's going into the fifth year of his contract potentially. Yeah, he had 4 years going into five, it looks like. And then you have Grady Jarrett, who's coming off an injury. He's going in, he's what, 9 years in the league? He's 30. So you have, like, in my opinion, everybody else, I don't really know their names, right? I've seen them make plays here and there. They're, a lot of them are unproven. A lot of guys have been shuffled around, but you sit at a spot in the draft where 8, 9, one of those, whatever pick they are. Maybe it's 7. But I'd imagine they go defense here. And I'd imagine they go defense a few times in this draft, because when you get that's the other thing. When you get a guy like Kirk Cousins, like, you don't necessarily need to keep pulling in all the reinforcements on offense. He can compensate for some, I guess, lesser talent. And I think that's part of the reason why they went after the guys that they did in the trades and whatnot in free agency. Like, I think they believe that Kirk Cousins can elevate those guys to be dudes, which I believe he can too. So defensive wise, can we go get an edge that can be a game wrecker? That's one thing that Raheem talked about all the time. Like, can this guy wreck a game? He had a guy that could wreck the game in LA with Aaron Donald. They have Grady Jarrett. Grady Jarrett's a really good player, and has not been seen to taper down at all. I'd imagine they go after an edge to get a guy that could be the next Hutchinson could be the next Bosa, just a guy that could really be a problem that needs more attention from the O-line than another DN would need. So that's where I think they're going to go. I think maybe I know linebackers aren't necessarily the most sexy thing in the world anymore, but they could get a good linebacker in this draft. I see some guys that are like low first, mid seconds that they could probably, if somebody falls to them, they could get the guy Peyton Wilson, right? Peyton Wilson from NC State, I think could be a good fit there if he falls to the second round of them. But they need some help on defense, and they need just some more like beefy, athletic front seven guys, from what I can tell.
Eighth overall pick the Falcons have this year. I believe they've had that same pick for the last 2 or 3 years. Yep. What is the general philosophy that you think Raheem Morris brings to the defensive side of the ball? Is he looking for quick speed guys? Do you think he's looking, you mentioned like beefing up the front seven. Like, what do you think the big changes that he makes to this defense?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing that he looks for, from what I can tell, is stop the run, create turnovers. Like, that's kind of the MO. And if I'm looking at anybody in this draft that they're going to take, you said eighth overall?
Yes.
Dallas Turner. If Dallas Turner's there, I think that's who they take. And I know a lot of people are starting to have him mocked there. He's a guy that he's, look, 6'4", 250, outside linebacker slash DN hybrid. He's a guy that can be moved around the D-line, can create havoc, can blitz off the ball, can blitz on the ball. Dallas Turner for me is that, like, kind of checks a few different boxes where I think if you there's something to be had about a linebacker slash DN that can be like a TJ Watt, where he's not only good in run situations, he's not only good in pass situations, he can drop out into a zone if he has to. Like, you can be creative as a defense coordinator where sometimes you just get these big DNs that are free, like, you know, 6'7", 280, 290 that can't really go and cover anybody. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. Like, how many different gadgets can you get in a defense like that? Because you do have a DB that's awesome. AJ Terrell is awesome. You have a safety that's awesome. You have a defensive lineman that's really good. And let's go get one more DN guy, edge guy that can go change this defense.
All right, Kurt, I want you to talk to Falcons fans because they have been used to dominating the NFC South. When you were there, they were dominating the NFC South. Not a great division. And I think they felt like they've probably left a little bit on the table in these last couple of years. So all these guys on offense, maybe a couple key pieces on defense that they feel like they can address in the draft. What do the Falcons need to do this year to get back on top?
All right. So the Falcons this year have the best chance to get back to where they should have been the last few years under the Arthur Smith regime. It's over. Page is turned, but they still have a lot of really good guys on that roster, and they're all young. As far as I'm concerned, chalk up this last year for Bijan, chalk up the last 2 to 3 years for Pitts and Drake London as a rookie campaign, one really long, grueling rookie campaign. And now they're going to get to go play real football in a real offense that goes and slings it around, spreads it around, and gets guys open in space consistently. There's no more beating your head against the wall versus bad looks. There's no more running the ball into heavy boxes for no reason. You are going to be put into the best situation possible as a receiver and as a running back on any given play. You're going to have a bunch of different checks. You're going to have a quarterback that can sling it, that can get you in the right play, and that can elevate this thing to the next level. And I think there probably has not been a more exciting time for a Falcons fan to watch football than it is this season. Mainly because when you had Matt Ryan and the team was good before they started sliding, the expectations were so high. And you kind of like expected that. The Super Bowl happened. Yes, they lost. And then the few years after that, I was just like, damn, man, like we just could not get over that hump. Now you've had it so bad when things roster-wise should have been pretty good that there is nothing but up from here. And there's a lot to look forward to. You have young talent. You got years left on some of these contracts. There's a lot as far as like perfect pieces falling together at the right time to be excited about. And I think Kirk Cousins is going to have a resurgence, and he's going to be just what the Falcons needed.